Accession number 27226, reel 28.
Lionel Hook, reel 28.
Right. By this time, I can't remember much more about China Bay. It was really marking time. And finally, my relief arrived, but Joe's hadn't arrived. They couldn't find one for him. But they'd lost the papers anyway, and we'd lost it completely. So, of course, the first thing we did was go down to Colombo very, very quickly and settle ourselves down there. And we were quite regular down at Colombo. Have I dealt with this before at all? Ah, well, Colombo was always home from home because that's where civilization was. And we could always fly down there and drop into the race course there. And there was an active rennery, which was quite useful. And the swimming and sailing, and when it was all different. It was a different life of China Bay. So we immediately went back there to Colombo, really, because we were freeloading. We could do what we liked. And one or two incidents there. I don't know if I've told you about the girl who drowned or anything like that in Colombo. Well, we used to go down to Colombo and stay in the naval messing there. So we had all the facilities of a naval mess in the epicenter of fun, really, because it was a swinging town, was Colombo. We had a rennery down the road. We had the hotel on a point going out around the beach. The beach was there for swimming. A dangerous beach, strangely enough, but we didn't realize it. We never looked at it that way. And we used to buy pineapples on the beach, and they cost us tuppence, and the boys used to come and carve all the bits off it, like a big pineapple lollipop on a stick. We were having a bit of a holiday, really, and of course the boys were down there, and this one episode where one of the things that the boys drank out there was gin, and the gin was manufactured, Paris Indian gin was made up in India, and the boys used to go and get the gin, which was bottled, but not in Gordon's gin bottles with the label on the side, but the, you know, the, what's the word for it, the, well, it's all over the place, it's, the bottles were a standard bottle for everything, pop, water, the like. And Joseph, what the hell do they call him? Ah, I can't remember his name. You get his name from the book anyway, if you want to look at it. But he went up to India to bring back a stock of gin for the boys up at China Bay. But he knew we were down at Colombo, so he decided to come down and see us in Colombo and join the fun of the weekend. And I don't drink. But Jack Dyson used to drink gin, and he would get very morose. He was he used to weep and everything. I used to tell him when he put on the foot on the clutch that he was putting the clutch in, and he'd say he was putting it out, you know. And I said that sort of thing. Was a good lad, Joe, a good pal of mine. Anyway, I wish I knew his name, because it's good for this part of the story. But Jack and Paul and some of the boys were there, and he brought this gin in. And they decided that they'd sit down and have a glass of gin, and they were drinking gin and water, sipping away quite cheerfully. And Joe couldn't understand how this gin, every time put water in it, got stronger and stronger and stronger. And he was pissed out of his mind, I'll tell you. He'd really gone over. But I can't remember his name, he decided to go back to Colombo. Not in a fit condition to fly an airplane back to Colombo, but they got back anyway. And he left the bottles of water and the bottles of gin here. And Joe and his pals continued to drink this gin and water. And what had happened, the laddie who had come down had taken all the water back as gin and left the boys with bottles of gin as water. And they weren't very well when they'd finished, I'll tell you. That's the sort of thing that they got up to. At swimming in course was in Colombo was the par for the course. And of course, going to Colombo, that's where movements. We knew the Renin movements, so we were always there to find out when our ship was coming in.
You mentioned that you were going to tell me the story about the girl who drowned?
Yeah, well, we were sailing there, we were swimming there, and we used to take a crowd on the beach and swim, and the beach there was pretty... it was a nice beach, good swimming beach, but dangerous. There was this very, very strong undertow. And one day we were down there, and the girl obviously got in difficulties out in the deep. And so it went, found her and pulled her out. And she'd lost it. She was drowning. And we got her back on shore and tried to pump her out and everything else, but she died. And she drowned there. It was a great sadness. But that was a danger. That was a side danger for all people there, because a lot of wrens were killed in strange circumstances. Just another one was a girl who drove a jeep, and she was drove a jeep out from Colombo out to the fishing place where we used to have fish, and she rolled it over and killed herself. You know, there was always sad tragedies like this. And of course, being that was a bit of a sadness, which we remember quite well. We couldn't bring her back, and but then we were still back at the Renery. You know, we used to go to the Renery and take them out at night and do whatever we could and get away with everything else. And I had what had happened? We used to get around the taxi. That was it. We go to the Renery, and Renery's like home from home. You go in there, wait for your wren, you get a cup of tea and a bun, and you wait, and then this, and you go out and do whatever you do at night. We used to go to the pictures mainly, and this particular night, I'd gone back and gone back in a taxi, dropped the girl outside the place, got her inside. Or whether she got in the back door. They could always get in. There was always a back way into the Renery that they could get in when they got back late. They were just worse than the boys, really. And I had a bit of an up and a down with the taxi driver. That was one of the problems, because wherever you are in the world, the taxi drivers are always charging more than they're worth, and they charge you more. And this taxi driver wanted a leg and an arm, and I said, you can't have a leg and an arm, I'll give you a leg, you know. And I paid him off, but he wasn't very pleased about it. And I've got the time, got to get this timing right, but now. Anyway, took the girl back, and she was returned to base and signed for, and I came out, and the taxi driver was still there, and he was playing hell, and then he set off, and I never paid him anything, and I saw him drive down the road into a street of big houses, which were mainly occupied by wealthy Sinhalese. They were backing onto the airfield as well, I think, but it's a bit. And I saw this taxi go down the road and turn off into one of these drives, right? And that's right, because it must have been on the way to the airfield, because I had to go down that road to get back to the airfield where we lived. And I thought this was a bit strange, and I went down. You know, it's not as good, not as clear as it used to be. I set off and went down. No, I went to the guard on the gate and said, look, there's something not quite right here. The taxi driver's gone down the road, and he's gone off, and I hadn't paid him, and we weren't best friends. And we walked down, that's right. We walked down to where it was. And he was waiting there with an iron bar for me. He was going to do me to death. But he made a mistake, because this bloke just took the iron bar from him and put it through his car, put it through his taxi windscreen, So he wasn't a very happy bunny either. But that was the sort of life you led, you know. You in a strange environment. It's all very well. You may be sophisticated. You may be world-wise. But, you know, the local people can be very difficult in the other places. And that was an indication. You see, you had an argument with a taxi driver because he was overcharging you, or you thought he was. So you didn't pay him. And it's no skin off his nose. He hits you with a bloody steel bar and you're lying dead in the ground. And he buggers off. No, we find him again. You know. But he paid a sharp price for that. So that was one incident. And we kept going back to the movements to find out when we were going to get back home. And then we thought, well, it would be a good idea. So we went up country to Neuralia and the rest house there, and we had a 10 days sojourn there. Have I told you about that place at all? Well, that was a holiday resort for all the troops who went on leave. I mean, you got there for a 12-month tour, and you've got to have leave sometime. And up country, it's in the country, it's cool, amongst the tea plantations and everything else. And it was a mixed bag. It was anybody there. It was officers, ratings, wrens, people generally. And it was a very, very pleasant break. And we caught on with people. It's the fires, you know, had fires. It was cold up at the top there. And we had girlfriends, and we used to go out for picnics and everything else. And I don't know whether I ought to tell you this story, really, but we were out in the... We'll go out on picnics, and you paired up with girls, and that was it. And I got a leech on the end of my John Thomas, and in an awkward situation. And the wrens knew what to do, and they lit a cigarette, got it off the end of my John Thomas. But you can imagine the embarrassment. There's quite a little bit more to that story, but that's good enough. But leeches got everywhere, of course, and they were a problem. And that was a good social letdown for any of the troops that could go up there. And the wrens were available. They were they were friendly girls, and it was as good a holiday resort as you could get. We had been there before, because that was a time when we went to Neuralia. I think we went by it in that bus with Godfrey, but it was nice. And that was in the tea. It was Ceylon as it was then. We were in the middle of a tea area where they did the tea. We didn't see much about it, and all I can remember was it was rather like home. You went in at the end of the day and sat by a nice big roaring fire, and it was where the Ceylon planters used to go when they got away from the down on the coast. But I wrote about that when I could remember it all, but now it's memories. I suppose also I was looking forward to going home.
I was going to say, were you frustrated at this time again? Because, you know, it'd been a long time that you'd been moved on into Ceylon, and you'd seen the aircraft carriers move out.
Oh, that was me. I was shot for that. But then I was going home, and I was going home with the war was still on, and I was going home. And I was quite happy in the tropics, and I hoped to get on a carrier so that I could go back. And the point was that I was going back for a progressive course, and at that stage I was qualified to fly about more. Well, the main aircraft they had on at Sea Fires, Corsairs, Avengers, Corsairs, Hellcats, Wildcats, and I was ready for the party, really. But to go home, I was entitled to go home. I had a wife at home, and why not? And we waited and went down to see the Wren in the movements, gave them chocolates and all sorts of things, kept us sweet. And finally we got a little note saying, well, you can go home now, and go home by sea. There's a ship in the harbour. Come, go away for 4 or 5 days, and come back, and you'll go home. Interim, Nothing. We packed up all our gear to go home, and we were keeping it down in Colombo. We'd left China Bay, and so all our gear was down there, already packed, of course. And we had a lot of rabbits to go take back too, and all the bits and pieces. And that was down there. The main stuff had been sent on ahead of the game, but we still had a lot of kit to go on board. So went down to movement, said, "Oh, the ship in, you can get all the gear on board, and come back in four or five days, and, you know, you can go home." Nice, you know. And we went off. I think we went... We didn't stay in... Don't remember, but that was the mind's blank. To come back, to go to movement, say, "The ship's in, you're ready to sail, go on to the ship." I got on board the ship to go home with Jack, and we're going to enjoy ourselves going back home, and a nice time and food and water and everything else. And the signal came. Home is cancelled. Pointed to the 26th Indian in the Army, Indian Division, as Staff Officer Air Planning for the attack of Akhiabenramri. Go and go to movements and find your way back there. I went to movements, and that's really the next part of the story, because I was taken off. Jack had gone home with all my clobber and everything else. I had nothing at that stage. There's an interregnum before I actually left the ship, where all the clothes I stood up in were civvies. I had no civil uniform at all, probably my flat hat or my naval hat. And that's a good time to stop, because that's when I can remember a little bit more about how I went to Burma. I'm now on board the ship, and I've got a signal which says, "Appointment home cancelled, report to Anasio headquarters." Period. And I thought, well, my pastor caught up with me. I thought I was in strife. And I went into this place, attired in civvies, and they took me through the doors, and they locked doors behind me and went down corridors and everywhere. And they went in a room, and there was a map on the wall, and it didn't mean a thing to me at all. And there was a commander looking after me, and he was very polite and very pleasant, and, you know, very... And he said, "Well, hook your appointments home, cancelled, you're going to Burma." And he said, "The object of the exercise is, we're going to attack Akab, which is down the coast in Ramri. It's got an airfield there. But until we get there, there's no airfield worth talking about down the thing. You go to liaise with the army. You've got to provide airfields for any aircraft that won't come ashore. You can see everybody when you get down there, and they know you're coming. But that's it. You get the airfield, sort them all out, let us know what's happening, and then you can go home." And that to me meant death, because the war was just starting, and I was going down there as stuff as air plans, as a naval planning guru, with nobody else but RAF and Pongos. So, they said, "You'll be dealing with Brigadier Adrian Lomax and Air Commodore," somebody else. He said, "They're the people responsible to." And there am I, I'm a touring wavy navy RNVR. Rubbish. Just told to go and get some airfields for this particular job. And the reason for that was that Salerno was very clear in their mind, because at Salerno they lost an awful lot of sea fires falling over the side, because there were no airfields to go ashore, and the winds were very light and airy, and sea fires are falling off the end of the light fleet carriers, something horrible. And so the object of the exercise was to put something ashore so that the boys could go to if they had a problem. Well, and they said, "You are to go there immediately. You will report back to China Bay on passage in HMS Kenya, to which you are appointed. Sir Arthur Power will be there on board. He will be the CNC. And you go to Chittagong. And when you get to Chittagong, report to the senior naval officer, and he'll arrange for transport to get you down to Cox's Bazaar, where you're stationed. Oh, right. Yes, sir. I made probably the biggest mistake of my life in terms of ego, because all I had to do was turn around to them and say, how am I going to deal with brigadiers and air commodores with a touring wavy navy in khaki? They give me junglies. I said, khaki. I kept my wings up on my uniform, a white cap cover, no identification whatsoever, didn't even have a dog tag, and you're sending me to Burma as a touring wavy navy. I said, that's ridiculous. I should have said, and I want a half stripe, because I would have got a half stripe straight away. But I didn't. So I ended up there. And can you imagine? Can you imagine a situation where I've been to Renasium headquarters, I've told what I've got to do, I've been briefed on what they're going to do to the island, and got a brief about Akiab, but nothing else. That was it. Report onto the Kenya, back to China Bay, you're sailing on such and such a date. Well, there I am, I'm going. I don't even know anybody, I don't know anything, I don't know really the details of the whole exercise, except somewhere along the line I've got to find some airfields. Easy enough to do, because, you know, find them, but we got ultimately the major problem. So say, we'll go and report on the Kenya as an RNVR officer dressed in junglies with a gun round my belt. I had a walking stick, which had been boys had given me in West Africa, it's beyond my time. I used to wear white silk flying gloves all the time, had a white cap cover, had wavy navy, I was in junglies, and a gun round my belt. I looked a bunch of rubbish, I was quite crazy. And I arrived on board the Kenya. Nobody knew what to do with me. I've seen the logbook, and it's written in gold there. Have Lieutenant Hook on board for urgent transmission to Cox's Bazaar, in the logbook. So I got made the fame there, the records. So go on board the Kenya. They don't even know that I'm coming. They don't even know what I am. They can't understand what this weird character is doing on board this battleship, to go all the way to Chittagong. So we get on board. They don't know what to do with me. Arthur Power's coming on board. The captain's gone out of his cabin. He's now CNC Eastern Fleet on the same ship. I'm going on board, so I'm going to be associated with him straight away. So I've got his aura. So I get a cabin. The first lieutenant gave me his cabin, and he slept in the corridor on one of these, you know, beds. I thought, this is grand. And we got into the Kenya, and really, don't remember much about that, except Chittagong, and we went off at full bat. We burnt more fuel than that. And Lord Louis was going over the top in his York. He was flying to Chittagong for the same particular activity. I didn't know this at the time. And so we're in China Bay Harbour, and we're all there, and suddenly I haven't any swimming trunks, I have no gear at any sort, I just watch what's going on. And they piped hands to bathe. Well, that to me was a disaster in itself for those blokes, because China Bay was a harbour, and they got all these ships in there, and the water must have been absolutely foul. But anyway, all the boys set off to, and we were watching the happenings. And it wasn't the first lieutenant, but it was a lieutenant. Had obviously done it many times before. He knew it was bathing, and so he did a running jump off the tail end of the carrier on the, you know, in the wardroom flats, or whatever, you know where the back is. Oh dearie me, I've lost. And he took a running jump over the side, and caught his toes on the rails. Have you not read it in the book? He caught his toes in the rail and went did a 90-degree turn and bashed his face on the side of the ship as he went down, broke his nose and fell into the water. There's blood all over the place. He did look a mess. They pulled him out and they sipped him ashore, put him into hospital. So everybody got their cabins back, got sifted back into cabins. So that was a good start to the trip. And I can't remember a great deal about the Cania at all now, but it was a pleasant trip, about 3 days, 2 or 3 days. But we burnt more oil fuel going up there. We went lickety-split to get there before Louis went there in his aeroplane. Can you imagine? It was the Kenya, it was quite a fast ship. And that was pleasant. We got there. So we got to...
What was Chittagong like? What was Chittagong like?
Well, I'm coming to that in a minute, because I haven't got there yet. I get to Chittagong, coming to the harbour, and I was just sent ashore to report to the SNO. No guide, nobody, nothing at all. Got to go somewhere, and so I reported to the SNSO. Obviously, there was a reason why I did that or how I could do it. But I was left to my own devices. And I spent the first night at the officers' club in Chittagong, not speaking a word of the language, in an empty officers' club, on the roof, in a string basher, without a mosquito net, with all my junglers with me, mosquito mats around me. And that was my first night in Chittagong, with no money, nothing at all to spend, to find my way around to Cox's Bazaar. So the next morning, I looked around, and the coastal forces, NCF 64, were down the harbour with the key ship HMS Kedah. So I walked along there and made my number with them. And they set up with the SNSO and everything else, so my communication link was right. And he sent, later on, we can wait for that a little while, because I spent two nights on the Kedah, I think. And that was horrible, because the first night there, I was bitten to hell by every bug and beetle in Christendom. Where they got there, they were in the bed. You know, I had a mosquito on it and everything else. And was that one planning? Yes, I've got to go to get down to Cox's Bazaar, which is 80 miles down the coast, and arrives all of a quickness a jeep with an Indian driver and another Indian behind with a gun to take me all the way down to Cox's Bazaar. And how do I get to Cox's Bazaar? Well, Cox's Bazaar is 80 miles, and the roads are pretty bad. And there's a one-way system going from Chittagong, or just outside Chittagong, to Cox's Bazaar, which is locked out while the convoy is coming up, and you're going down. I got there, and it was locked. I couldn't go down. Oh. By this time... Yeah.